Welcome to Torah Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rivka Kahan, and I'm excited to learn Sefer Bamidbar with you. Today we'll be learning Parshat Shlach. In the first three parshiot of Sefer Bamidbar, we learned of Bnei Yisrael's multifaceted preparations for their entry into Eretz Yisrael, which they believed was just a few weeks away. But throughout this narrative, there have been intimations and a subtle foreshadowing that for all of their practical preparations, Bnei Yisrael are not really ready internally for this dramatically new stage in their national spiritual journey. In Parshat Bamidbar, we learn together that their census may have indicated an implicit sense that their military victory would come through their own strength and numbers, rather than through Hashem's salvation that would crown their efforts with victory. And in Parshat Bahalotcha, we began to see everything slide off the rails, as their doubts in Moshe Rabbeinu and in their national mission expressed themselves both in the national complaints and in Miriam and Aaron's critique of Moshe. In Parshat Shlach, all of those doubts come to their terrible climax in Chet HaMeraglim. One of the keys to understanding the true significance of Chet HaMeraglim and its impact on the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem is by analyzing the anguished tefillah of Moshe in the wake of the sin, and particularly the way in which he invokes the Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim that Hashem taught him after Chet HaEgel. In Shmot Lamed Daled, Hashem teaches Moshe the Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim through which he is meant to seek forgiveness for the Jewish people when they need it. In Bamidbar Yud Daled, after Chet HaMeraglim, Moshe pleads with Hashem by invoking these Midot. But there are significant differences between the Nusach that Hashem teaches Moshe in Parshat Ki Tisa and the midot that Moshe chooses to include in his tefillah in Parshat Shlach. In Parshat Shlach, after his initial tefillah for the Jewish people, which is centered on the idea that the surrounding nations will think that Hashem was incapable of bringing the people into the land if he destroys them as punishment for Chet HaMeraglim, Moshe davens the following: Hashem erech apayim v'rav chesed nosei avon v'fesha v'nakei lo yinakei poked avon avot al banim al shileshim v'al ribiim. As we know from our davening of the Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim in our own tefillot, Moshe leaves out several of the Midot HaRachamim. Not only that, but his choices about which ones to include and exclude seem perplexing, given that his goal in this tefillah is to petition on behalf of the Jewish people. So let's look at the differences. Moshe begins by saying the name Hashem once. Usually the Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim open with Hashem Hashem, but he says only Hashem. He leaves out the phrase Kel Rachum V'chanun, merciful and gracious God. He then says Erech Hapayim V'rav Chesed, slow to anger and of abundant kindness, but leaves out the word V'emet and truth. He leaves out Notzer Chesed La'alafim, he preserves kindness to the thousandth generation. And he then says Nosei Avon V'fesha, he forgives iniquity and transgression, but leaves out the final word V'chata'a and sin. And he concludes by leaving in the entire phrase, V'nakei lo yinakei poked avon avot al banim al shileshim v'al ribayin, who does not totally acquit visiting the sins of the fathers on the children and on the children's children to the third and fourth generation. It seems that Moshe omits some of the midot that we would expect him to cling to, the ideas of Hashem's mercy and preserving of kindness over the generations, and leaves in some that we would expect to be the last ones he wants to call to mind right now, like Poked Avon Avot Al Banim. The Mefarshim seek to understand Moshe's choices in his tefillah and how this tefillah is uniquely designed to appeal on behalf of the Jewish people in the particular predicament they're in now after Chet HaMeraglim. Let's focus on the explanations of Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor and the Ramban. Both of these Mefarshim interpret Moshe's tefillah as an attempt to appeal to Hashem's mercy in a way that reflects understanding and honesty about the nature of Bnei Yisrael's sin. Moshe invokes those midot harachamim that will help Bnei Yisrael while trying not to overreach in a way that would make it seem that he doesn't really understand the gravity of what's gone wrong. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor explains Moshe's omission of one Shem Hashem and of Hashem's name Kel. The invocation of Hashem Hashem, the Bechor Shor explains, is meant to represent the two fundamental ways that Hashem relates to man, through Rachamim and Din, mercy and judgment. Moshe includes just one Shem Hashem, as he's trying to invoke only the Midat HaRachamim, knowing that according to the Midat HaDin, it's all over. He also leaves out the name Kel, which is also associated with justice and judgment. But if Moshe is so desperately trying to invoke only the Midat HaRachamim, why does he then omit the phrase Rachum V'chanun? Both the Ramban and Rav Yosef Korshor suggest that this is where Moshe's realism and honesty come in. The fact is that the gravity of this sin was so serious that asking for just pure forgiveness was too much of a stretch. It would reflect a serious lack of honesty about what went wrong. So Moshe doesn't have the audacity to do that, but instead asks not for forgiveness, but for forbearance, for arichut apayim, and invokes Hashem's undeserved kindness, his chesed. He chooses to leave out the word emet, truth, because the truth is that the people are guilty and deserving of the most serious punishment. So Moshe is doing a delicate dance among the midot, on the one hand invoking the midat ha-chesed and leaving out the midot of din and emet, and at the same time trying not to overreach by asking for total mercy and forgiveness. Moshe then skips over notzer chesed la'alafim, which is essentially the notion of zchut avot, that Hashem preserves kindness for coming generations, because it would be the most brazen chutzpah at this point to invoke the privilege of zchut avot. The greatest gift that the avot sought and the legacy they left their descendants was Eretz Yisrael. To ask for zchut avot in the wake of a sin that represents Bnei Yisrael's rejection of Eretz Yisrael would be totally tone-deaf and betray a complete lack of self-awareness. Finally, Moshe pleads with Hashem as one who forgives iniquity and transgression, nosei avon v'pesha, but leaves out the word v'chata'a, which implies a less grave, less intentional sin, since Bnei Yisrael at this juncture are guilty of the most intentional, deliberate sin and rejection of Hashem. To invoke Hashem as a forgiver of chata'a might imply that Moshe doesn't recognize the nature of chet ha-meraglim, which is not chata'a, but the most serious zadon, intentional, malicious wrongdoing. All of these ideas reflect the sensitivity with which Moshe pleads the Jewish people's case, while subtly demonstrating self-awareness and honesty about what they've done. He's carefully and strategically calling upon Hashem's mercy, while trying not to go so far as to whitewash the seriousness of Chet HaMeraglim. The biggest question, though, is why Moshe leaves in the midah of Poked Avon Avod Al Banim. The question of whether Hashem actually punishes children for their parents' sins, and if so, why, is complex and not easily resolved. There are psukim and narratives throughout Tanakh that seem to offer different answers as to whether people are punished for their ancestors' sins, and there is rich discussion among commentators from the Gemara through the ages about the theological implications of this issue. We're going to focus on just one specific angle on this question, which is, why would Moshe include this midah when he's pleading for Hashem's mercy and when he's already cherry-picking midot harachamim to include in his tefillah? How can this midah reflect an aspect of divine rachamim? Let's consider three possible approaches to this issue. If you're interested in a more thorough exploration of the idea of Poked Avon Avot Al Banim throughout Tanakh, please see the essay Are Children Punished for Parents' Sins? Available at alhatorah.org. First, let's look at the words of the Ramban in the continuation of his Perush that we cited earlier. The Ramban says, Poked Avon Avot, Lemor She'im Yireh Shelo Limchot Avonam. Moshe meant to say that if Hashem would decide not to erase their sin, Yifkod Avon Avot Al Bneihem V'le'erech HaPav Yikachem, he should visit the iniquity of the fathers upon their children and should be patient in punishing them. U'mizeh Haita Gzeira Likboa Lehem B'chiyah L'darot B'layla Hazeh, Ki Pakad Avonam Al Zaram. And it was because of this that there was a divine decree to establish weeping for the generations on this night, Tisha B'Av, because Hashem visited their sin on their descendants. In other words, Ramban is saying that this is Moshe's last-ditch effort. If, despite Moshe's tefillah, Hashem chooses not to forgive, Moshe is begging that at least the punishment be spread out over the generations so that the Jewish people isn't entirely destroyed. Ramban offers the fascinating insight that the divine decree of B'chiyah L'dorot, of weeping throughout the generations on Tisha B'Av, is actually a profound manifestation of Hashem's mercy. It reflects that the historical, collective identity of the Jewish people as a whole can bear that which one generation cannot. Poked Avon Avod Al Banim is a midat harachamim, in the sense that it means that we as a nation share the burden so that the Jewish people can survive. A second, and probably the most famous approach to this issue, is that of Chazal in the Gemara and Brachot Zayin Amud Aleph, quoted by Rashi in his Perush on Parshat Ki Tisa. Chazal teach that people are punished for their parents' sins only if they continue in their sinful paths. As Rashi says, "K'she'och sin masei avotehem biyadehem," when they grasp their parents' actions in their hands. In other words, Poked Avon Avot Albanim isn't a general rule, but it means that if people continue in their parents' wicked paths, they're punished more severely than they would be just for their own sins. One could ask why this is fair. It could be argued precisely the reverse, that if my children continue down negative paths that they learned from me, they should be held less accountable since they were born into this. I think that this reflects the Torah's belief in each person's free choice and capacity to make moral choices even when one has been taught otherwise. Also, one might argue that the Torah considers it necessary to provide more of a deterrent for bad behavior when it's inherited, since it's harder to uproot. Because it comes so naturally, the Torah sets forth a greater punishment as a deterrent to offset the inclination to continue in the same path. Furthermore, one might suggest that when a negative behavior becomes so ingrained in a family or a people, it becomes a culture rather than just an isolated sin, and thus is more egregious. In any case, Rashi and Chazal understand Poked Avon Avot Albanim not as a general rule of divine behavior, not as a general Midat Hadin, but as limited to circumstances in which people choose to cling to negative behaviors over the course of generations. Perhaps this even includes a hint of mercy in implying that if the Jewish people don't continue in this path, if they make better choices in the future, they won't be punished for the sin. Now let's turn to a radical reading of the mercy implicit in Poked Avon Avot Albanim that's found in the Midrash in Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer. The Midrash says, "Gedula hatzalat banim la'avot yoter mehatzalot ha'avot la'banim." Children's capacity to save their parents is greater than parents' capacity to save their children. "Shahavot einan matzilin et bneihen ela min hayisurin shel olam hazeh bilvad." Because parents only save their children from suffering in this world. The Midrash goes on to explain they bequeath them wealth, they save them from plagues, they make them inherit strength, they save them from weakness. But aval b'yom hadin einan yucholin la'tzilotan midina shel gehinnom. But on the day of judgment, parents cannot save their children from the judgment of Gehinnom. Shene'emar ve'ein miyadi matzil. As it says in Parshat Hazinu, there is none that can deliver out of my hand. Lo Avraham matzil Yishmael velo Yitzchak matzil Esav. Avraham doesn't save his son Yishmael, Yitzchak doesn't save his son Esav ultimately on the Yom Hadin. Aval habanim matzilin et ha'avot midina shel Gehinnom. But, the Midrash continues, children do save their parents from the judgment of Gehinnom. And the Midrash goes on to explain that adults save their parents through their good deeds, through the good deeds that they do in the wake, even after their parents' lives. What this Midrash is saying is that a person's punishment for sin must be determined within the context of the entire legacy that he or she has left behind. If any of one's descendants over the next four generations are righteous, the person isn't punished in Olam Haba. Hashem holds their punishment in abeyance to see how their generations will behave, because often a person's full impact and legacy can only be understood in retrospect, over the passage of time. In the view of this Midrash, Poked Avon Avot Albanim is a wondrous Midat HaRachamim. Moshe is essentially davening that Hashem hold off on judgment completely, waiting to see the long story of how this generation has impacted the coming generations in ways that cannot yet be known. When we consider Moshe's invocation of the Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim in the wake of Chet HaMeraglim, we can understand more deeply the nature of Bnei Yisrael's relationship to Hashem at this point in their story, and also learn deep lessons about the nature of Tefillah and Tshuva. Moshe understands fully the gravity of Chet HaMeraglim. In many ways, Chet HaMeraglim seems more egregious than Chet HaEgel in the eyes of the Torah. Certainly, the Gezerah of punishment is not fully reversed in the same way. Chet HaEgel certainly causes reverberations throughout Jewish history, with every punishment of the Jewish people including a facet of punishment for Chet HaEgel. And yet, Chet HaEgel is able in some ways to be sublimated. Ultimately, through Chet HaEgel, we eventually reach the kapara of Yom Kippur. Chet HaMeraglim, by contrast, leads only to tragedy, to the Bechiah L'dorot of Tisha B'Av, a day that, as Rav Soloveitchik said, is devoid of holiness. I believe that the fundamental difference between Chet HaEgel and Chet HaMeraglim is that Chet HaEgel reflected an energy and enthusiasm that was missing at Chet HaMeraglim. Chet HaEgel is the epitome of the idea of Ritzat Raglayim L'hara, of running to do evil. And yet that energy can ultimately, with great work and effort, be redirected in positive, holy ways. Chet HaMeraglim, by contrast, was a sin of despair, of hopelessness, and that is almost impossible to redirect. Moshe understood deeply all that Chet HaMeraglim represented and what a deep wound it was in the heart of the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Israel. Through his tefillah, he turned to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a plea for mercy and rebuilding, together with the wisdom and honesty to select which Midot HaRachamim could be invoked on Bnei Israel's behalf and which were just beyond their reach at that moment in Jewish history. May we be inspired by Moshe's example to turn to Hashem in tefillah during our own time of crisis for Am Yisrael, with full belief in Hashem's mercy and power, together with the wisdom and honesty to look inward in our own cheshbon ha-nefesh and tshuva on behalf of the Jewish people. Shabbat Shalom.